This is Blue Wire.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. I'm with Jason Pat. Jason, this is our Pippen episode, episode number 33.
Yeah, it is. Big time right here, number 33. Big episode, kind of, I guess, because now got the draft lotteries done. Draft pick number 7. We obviously talked about that in our last pod. Now, and then the scouting combine, the draft combine in Chicago. You, my friend, were there and made some noise there in a little picture with Larry Bird. How, speaking of 33, Larry Bird jersey 33, shout out to, I think that was LFO, shout out to them. How was the combine, my man?
Combine was pretty cool, yeah. Larry Bird asked me to take a picture. He said he was a big fan of SB Nation, and, you know, I thought I'd stop and take one for the readers. That moment was really funny. My phone just started blowing up because one of the Tribune photographers got just a funny picture of me walking behind Larry Bird. So it's Larry Bird in the foreground and me in the background. That was probably the highlight of my combine, because otherwise what I try to do when I go there is talk to as many players as possible in terms of like getting quotes for potential stories I'm going to do. So like I had a long talk with Grant Williams. I talked to Nazir Little a little bit. I talked to Jalen LeCue, who's the high school player who's thinking about going as a fifth-year guy into the NBA without going to college at NC State. So, you know, that part was it's okay. I mean, it's such a chaotic scene back there with like TV cameras trying to get interviews with guys. I don't have you ever covered it before?
I have not.
It's fun to do, but like it's not the best setting for like getting great stuff because it's more of a rat race than
there's just like so many people there.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. Not really a place where you can really like develop personal connections, but I did get some good quotes from some guys. It was a fun event. Obviously the combine's crazy because everywhere you look, it's just like famous people. Like you open a door and you walk inside and it's Masai Ujiri, or you know, you turn the corner and you bump into Rick Carlisle. It's like the entire NBA is basically there. I remember last year Giannis was there because his brother, Kostas, was going through the combine then. So it's a pretty cool event. I would say I enjoyed it this year, but, you know, Zion didn't talk. Ja Morant, it was impossible to get to him. He was just surrounded by TV.
Oh, yeah, I saw the huge crowds.
You know, once again, NBA draft combine, like, not the same. It doesn't have the same value as it does in the NFL, right? In the NFL, like the combine is so important. I do think there were a few guys who, you know, could be classified as winners and losers. And overall, it's always a fun event. I'm happy to have it in Chicago.
So winners and losers, like you mentioned, is there anybody who possibly around like the Bulls, or I guess just anybody in general who stood out, or if there's anybody you think the could be in the Bulls range, first round pick, second round pick, anybody really, I guess, yeah, winners and losers, go for it.
Yeah, well, you know, I think a lot of that stuff is a little bit overblown, but like one guy who opened some eyes to me was Luka Semantic, who's a 6'11 dude from Croatia. He was the only international player in the combine, and I knew that he had a reputation as being like one of the better shooters in this draft. He got on NBA radars early in his career because he played well in like FIBA tournaments against like USA Basketball in a lot of cases. So this was the first time I'd seen him in person, and he was a lot like just bigger and more muscular than I would have imagined. His jump shot looks really good, and he's super tall. He's 6'11", dude who bombs threes. So he was the one guy who really jumped out to me. And then, you know, LeCue was interesting too, because I had seen him on the EYBL circuit, the Nike circuit, a year ago. He was someone who was a recruit. He basically went from like totally off the radar to a 5-star. He like, you know, made one change in leagues. I think maybe he started playing on the Nike circuit after he wasn't on it. And he's so athletic that, he immediately like, you know, raised some eyebrows and they elevated him to 5-star status because of that. He committed to NC State, and he's contemplating going into the draft as a fifth-year senior. He had a 43-inch vertical. He's just insanely athletic as a 6'3 point guard. He's pretty unpolished as a passer and basically a non-shooter right now, but I thought he made some nice passes. He actually played in 5-on-5, unlike Anfernee Simons, who took the same path to the NBA last year. He He was a first-round pick of the Blazers. Look, he was kind of interesting. He could maybe be a pick at 38. Another guy who the Bulls had in yesterday was Shamari Ponds, who's been a really great scorer for St. John's the last few years. He's like a 6'1 guard. His strengths and weaknesses are kind of similar to Kobe White's, but he's much smaller. But the Bulls actually brought in Shamari Ponds. I saw that on Instagram for a workout, and he's an intriguing player too because he's so quick and shifty as a ball handler, and he shoots the hell out of it. The ideal comparison for him, the ideal role, is like a microwave scorer off the bench. The best of those guys being Lou Williams right now, obviously. But you know, if the Bulls are looking for, you know, some shifty ball handlers who can get their own offense going and shoot from range, I think that Ponds is another guy they'll consider at the 38th pick.
Nice. So I guess looking, you mentioned Kobe White, and I feel like that's been like him and Garland have obviously, the Bulls need a point guard, Darius Garland. That's been the popular names. We talked about them on their last podcast. Did both of them left the combine early, correct?
Yeah, I don't think they went through with any, well, they definitely didn't go through with any of the physical stuff. I think Kobe White got measured because I saw that his wingspan was shorter than his height.
Oh yeah, it was like 6'3", 6'4", something like that.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, so the speculation is that those guys got draft promises.
Right. And, so I guess
wrote that in the Tribune this week.
Yeah. So I guess like, it seems like they both possibly got promises ahead of the Bulls. Cause again, Bulls are number seven. There were rumors that like the Lakers might've given a promise that I think Garland or I think Kobe White's I saw was ahead of the Bulls as well. I mean, you look at who's picking ahead of the Bulls, like the Suns need a point guard. So I would assume that they're going to take one of those guys, whoever's available. Is Morant's going to go two? It looks like Zion, number one. Morant, probably two. That's already been reported to the Grizzlies. They'll probably trade Mike Conley and take John. And then after that, so the Knicks will probably take Barrett, I would guess. And then at four, you got, like, I think the Lakers, I mean, even the Knicks are also just a wild card because who knows what happens with Anthony Davis. I guess who would you say would most likely be the teams that would give a promise to the to guys like that?
Yeah, I mean, the three teams I think you would look at are the Lakers, the Suns, and the Bulls. We know the Bulls gave Chandler Hutchison a promise last year around the same timeline, like as it is right now, like, you know, around the combine. I think it could potentially be the Bulls, even though what Casey has reported is that he was the first person I saw that reported that Kobe White could have a promise before the Bulls. The Garland rumors have been out there, but no one knows who gave him the promise. I don't know. It's kind of tough to figure out. To me, the Lakers pick is, there's so many ways that pick can go because obviously their main intention is going to be to try to trade it for a proven player, ideally Anthony Davis, but even if the Pelicans won't trade him Davis, I think they're going to shop that pick for another young veteran. So it would seem weird to me that they would give out a promise.
Yeah.
And I think the Suns, like everyone knows the Suns need a guard. So the Suns are, I mean, I think they would take Garland or White if one of them are off the board. The question is, you know, will Garland fall to six so that White will still be on the board for the Bulls? Or, you know, would they take White over Garland, leaving Garland for the Bulls? So yeah, the Lakers really hold the keys to the draft. I don't know what to make of the promises. We know the Bulls did it last year. The thing about the way this draft broke down is it's just going to be tough for the Bulls with Phoenix having a similar needed guard picking one spot ahead of them.
Yeah, that is tough. And then like, was it the Cavs at five? Like they have Colin Sexton, but I don't know if they take another guard. I guess I would assume they would take a wing. They would probably go Culver or Hunter. Would you think that makes sense for them, or if they want to reach on Cam Reddish, I don't know.
Or they could take Kobe White too if they see him as a two guard.
Yeah, exactly.
Get him next to Sexton, maybe there's your promise. So I don't know. I think that the best case scenario for the Bulls would be Jarrett Culver falling to them at the seventh pick. And the scenario in which that happens is Zion goes one, Ja goes two, RJ goes three. The Lakers take Garland at four. The Cavs take DeAndre Hunter at five. It's six. You have Kobe White Suns, and then that leaves Jarrett Culver to the Bulls at number seven. So I don't know how likely that scenario is. I think that it's certainly possible, though, especially given that Culver doesn't seem like he's going to be a fit at number six for Phoenix because they want a guard. I think that would be a really good scenario for the Bulls. Best case scenario to me in this draft is Jarrett Culver falling to seven.
Yeah, I mean, that would be really good. Obviously, the Bulls do need a point guard. They made a bunch about it. But Culver, I mean, considering I feel like Smart, you've talked about it. I've seen a lot of other draft people talk about it, him possibly even being like the second best prospect in the draft. I know like he struggled at the end of that tournament with his shooting and his shot is questionable. But all the stuff I've read that would be Culver going to seven would be great. I think The Athletic did a mock draft, and I think that is what happened. I think Darnell Mayberry of The Athletic took Culver for the Bulls at seven. I mean, I would certainly be down with that. The Bulls need two-way wings. That's what Culver projects at. Even they can obviously get a point guard somewhere else in free agency. I guess that could be a good transition to other point guard talk in terms of free agency. There was a rumor, speaking of Darnell Mayberry as well, a new rumor, new fresh hot rumor off from The Athletic. Darnell Mayberry reported that the Bulls, let me go pull that rumor up exactly, just the wording that these, the Bulls are interested in Terry Rozier, Boston Celtics point guard, had a tough season this year with the Celtics. I mean, the Celtics were kind of a mess in general. Rozier, of course, had the really nice playoff run last season when they went to the Eastern Conference Finals without Kyrie Irving, without Gordon Hayward. And he was the starter. Rozier went back to the bench and just really never got comfortable, and the Celtics really never had it. At the end of this season, Terry Rozier went on like a crazy, he went on like a media tour, media blitz on ESPN, and they basically was kind of airing out some dirty laundry of the Celtics. It almost seemed like he was trying to play himself away from Boston. He's going to be a restricted free agent. So yeah, this is from Darnell Mayberry from The Athletic, and he said, aside from Patrick Beverley, Boston guard Terry Rozier is on the Bulls' radar, commanding Chicago's attention with fearless play and hard-nosed defensive effort. Inside the Advocate Center, there's genuine belief that Rozier could be exactly who the team needs. Chicago could make a run at the restricted free agent this summer, but it's unclear who holds the edge between Rozier and Beverley on the organization's wish list. Rozier is 6 years younger, making him a more ideal fit with the current building blocks. I know we've talked about Beverley a bit, Chicago guy, hard-nosed defender, rugged guy. We saw him play pretty well in the playoffs with the Clippers. I feel like that would make a lot of sense if they're going the veteran route. Terry Rozier is a bit younger, as he mentioned, 6 years younger. I believe he's actually one day apart age-wise with Chris Dunn. I think they both have like mid-March birthdays, and they just turned 25 this year. What do you make of this rumor that the Bulls like Terry Rozier?
Yeah, really bizarre to me, and I sort of get what the Bulls are thinking. They want to get a young player at that position who they think, can grow with the rest of the core. But what everyone's going to say is Terry Rozier even better than Chris Dunn?
Right.
Our boy Mark, who also has the pod on Blue Wire, Bulls HQ, he tweeted the stats, and they're remarkably similar between Chris Dunn and Terry Rozier. Rozier's one big advantage is just his three-point rate. Three-point attempts, he was averaging 8.6 per 100 possessions compared to 3.5 for Chris Dunn, and Rozier hit 35% of his threes. Rozier was just a miserable scorer from two-point range this year, though, only 40%. Obviously, he was sort of a breakout guy a year ago when the Celtics entered the playoffs. Kyrie Irving got hurt. Rozier suddenly elevated to being this like fearless defender who would kickstart them in transition and who had a lot of scoring ability off the dribble. He really sort of regressed this year, I think. And to me, that's not the guy I would hitch my wagon to if I'm the Bulls, because I think that, you know, while he has some strengths and weaknesses, like he's just not a good lead decision maker. Like Chris Brown averaged 9 assists per 100 possessions, and Terry Rozier averaged 5.7. I would love Lonzo if those rumors could somehow be true, because I think the type of point guard the Bulls need looks a lot more like Lonzo Ball than it does Terry Rozier. Rozier, while he does have talent, what the Bulls need is like a pass-first guy who can sort of get everyone going in the offense so that it doesn't descend into like a my turn, your turn with Zach LaVine, taking up most of the possessions. They really need someone to get him to play cohesively, the Bulls do. And Terry Rozier is just not like a great floor general in the classic sense. So I don't like that rumor if I'm the Bulls. And I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I was pretty outspoken against it. Like I said that like if it was like a 1 year deal or something, like give him a chance, like I guess I could see it taking a chance. I mean, he's not even that young. He's 25. He's the same age as Chris Dunn. And a lot of people made a big deal about his big playoffs, and like he was pretty good. He had some really nice games, but if you look at the numbers, like he still weren't that great. He shot barely over 40%. He hasn't shot over 40% in a season in his four-year career. Like, he's never done it. He's been under 40%, and his overall efficiency, that his decent three-point shooting helps prop it up a little bit, and his, you mentioned the three-point rate, but he doesn't get to the line much either. That's a big issue with Chris Dunn. In terms of, you mentioned, like, the decision-making as, like, a lead passer, I know he doesn't turn the ball over much, but in terms of just, like, creating for others, it's not that great. I think his defense from I can't say that I've watched a lot of Terry Rozier play defense, but from what I was gathering on Twitter, like, a lot of Celtics fans were kind of mocking the Bulls for that comment about, like, his hard-nosed defensive effort. Like, oh, who at Terry Rozier is that? From what I've recall is that he can bring it when he wants to, but, like, it's not always there. The effort wasn't always there. He did in his career, his numbers have been better as a starter, even in the regular season, as well as shooting just in general is better. It seems like he just never was able to find a rhythm, I guess, off the bench playing behind Kyrie. And I know he really struggled to start his career. And like you mentioned, like, the Bulls could either, I feel like at point guard, they either need a dude that can, like you said, like a good pass, really good playmaker, like a, I guess, 3-and-D type guy, I guess, or they need just a complete stud at point guard. And I feel like Terry Rozier seems like a guy who thinks he's really good, but he wouldn't be. So he could be a guy, you mentioned the your turn, my turn, like, where he's just out there, like, just jacking shots, taking it away from other guys when he's just not good enough to do that. Like, I would totally be fine with a score first point guard if he was, like, a legit bona fide star. I feel like Terry Rozier is not that, but he might think he's like that. So I definitely would have my hesitation, like, long-term deal. Like, I just couldn't see it. Like, I just don't think that'd be the right play. I'd rather go for a stopgap and maybe kick the can down the road rather than committing long-term interior. I just don't think he's that good at basketball. And I think he probably thinks that he's good at basketball. I don't know.
For me, it would be emblematic of a problem the Bulls front office always has, which is that they overvalue the guys that they liked in the draft, even if they haven't really shown much in their short pro careers. I remember writing at the time, it was the year the Bulls drafted Portis, that I thought they were going to take Terry Rozier. I think there was just, like, some buzz around that in general, and I remember tweeting about it a few times, thinking the Bulls would take Rozier. Rozier ended up going higher than Portis. He went with the Celtics pick, which was
16.
Which was considered a big shock to a lot of people. Obviously, he delivered on the value of that pick, I think, just with the way he played for them last season when Kyrie went down. But, it's like Rozier has some obvious holes. They probably liked him in the draft, which is the same reason they got Jerry and Grant, you know, long ago, because they liked him in the draft.
Was that the year? This was totally different. I'm trying to think. Who was he, 2015 or 2016 draft? He was 2015.
He was the same year as Portis.
I can't remember. I can't remember if that was the year where, like, the Bulls were talking about when going back to, like, thinking about trading Jimmy, and, like, they were talking to Celtics. I couldn't remember if that, what, like, that draft pick was one of the, like, pieces involved. I can't remember exactly, but I don't know, that's completely besides the point. But yeah, just like you mentioned, like, just the whole thing about being like, is he actually better than Chris Dunn? Like, would you rather hitch, like, a 3-year deal? I think because he's a restricted free agent, assuming the Celtics don't just, like, cut bait and, like, make him unrestricted, has to be 2 years with no options. And then I would guess, like, a deal would look something like a 3-year deal, maybe like a team option. Unless, I guess, somebody else wants to take a big chance on him. I just don't think he's really done that. But, like, you mentioned just, like, the numbers, just they're so similar besides, like, the 3-point rate and stuff like that. Like, Chris Dunn's true shooting percentage, 47.5% for his career. And Terry Rozier's not even above 50, not even above 50s at 49. So it's like, I just feel like they need more efficiency and, like you said, more better playmaking from that spot. I don't know. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan. Like I said, I would rather get a guy like Beverly, and there's going to be other options out there as well. So I guess we'll see on that. But you mentioned the Lonzo thing. What about Lonzo? Would you like on the Bulls? Just his whole, because Lonzo's just he's a really interesting just prospect. He's been hurt. I feel like he's had the injury problems like Chris Dunn. His shot is ugly. His free throws are ugly. Like, his 3-point shooting, I'm pretty sure is okay. It's kind of been hit or miss, but it's not terrible. And he's willing to shoot the threes. Playmaking was obviously the big thing coming out of UCLA. Just a great playmaker, great instincts for the game. Just what would you really like about Lonzo and the Bulls if they were able to pursue a deal like that?
Yeah, I like Lonzo in general. He hasn't really been able to show what he could do in the NBA, in my opinion. For one, because of the durability issues, as you mentioned, and also because the Lakers have just been a disaster in his 2 years in the NBA. They're as poorly run as the Bulls at this point, which we know is just the most humiliating thing that can be said about a front office. I like Lonzo because I think that he is a really smart, brilliant passer. And like on a Bulls team that doesn't really have any good passers or any good decision makers, I think that, you know, Lonzo would immediately become the guy who would just like get the offense going. I think he would kickstart it with outlet passes, which he was always known for early in his career. I like his ability to push the ball up the court in transition. I think that having a guy like Zach LaVine would be a great backcourt partner next to Lonzo because Lonzo is big. He's a great, just like big play defender. Like he's so good roaming off the ball, getting blocks and steals. I think that he'd be a really good help defender next to Zach LaVine in the backcourt. And then offensively, he'd be the type of guy who could like unlock LaVine's best self, I think, because he'd be able to, you know, hit him with passes to take him away from situations where he's over dribbling. Like the offense would have some motion to it with Lonzo at the point, I think, unlike, you know, when it stalls when LaVine's the main ball handler. So I would love Lonzo. If they could trade the 7th pick for Lonzo Ball, I would totally do it. And then the idea would be the Lakers would use that 7th pick to put in a package for Anthony Davis. I don't find it like realistic really First of all, the Pelicans are just not going to trade Anthony Davis to the Lakers.
That's what it seems like.
Will that happen? So, and then I don't know if the Bulls could get involved even in a 3-team trade with Anthony Davis and, you know, get either a better draft pick or like get some draft compensation or get a young player like Lonzo, I totally do it. And that is something they should be looking for, but the Bulls front office won't do it because they're too lazy.
I know Casey, I feel like, specifically brought up when he was talking, he did a whole piece at the Tribune just about the point guard situation, about the options. I know he brought up specifically like Chris Dunn and the number 7 pick for Lonzo, and like that's not realistic. Because he was also talking about just how Chris Dunn's like trade value is low to non-existent was the way he put it, which, I mean, is not a surprise. He's a 25-year-old point guard who's got 1 year left on his rookie deal, and he really hasn't shown anything much besides being occasionally hitting billy shots and being a decent defender. So like I feel like, yeah, it probably isn't a realistic deal to make. Lonzo's what, 21 still only, right? I mean, he's so young. Like he's so smart for his age. It'd be nice if he could stay healthy, develop that jumper a bit more. Like just ideally, if he even got okay at shooting, and the way you mentioned this with LaVine, you mentioned like the transition stuff, I feel like would be great with Lowry, with LaVine, with Lonzo pushing pace and stuff like that. I mean, that sounds really interesting. Yeah, Lonzo's 21; he'll be 22 basically the start of next season. And he's 6, and the defense as well, 6'6", could be a really solid defender, and the Bulls need help defensively. Like, it definitely is something that would be interesting to look into. I just don't know. You mentioned the Lakers, like, and the Pelicans not trading the Lakers. Like, the Lakers are just such an incredible shit show right now. Like, Magic Johnson just raining hellfire all over First Take earlier this week, just basically airing out all that dirty laundry and just a complete hot mess. Like, I'm really curious to see what they do, if they pull off any big moves, because I don't know, it is just a mess. And I'm really curious, like, how they feel about Lonzo at this point, because he has been injured all this time. Like, the team was disappointing this season. There's the LeVar stuff. He hasn't been that huge of a distraction, but I mean, he still spouts off sometimes. What do you think the Lakers even think about him? Like, I honestly don't know. He's kind of an enigma, and he's kind of interesting. I don't know.
Yeah. Like I said, I've always been a Lonzo proponent. I think he'd be a good fit in the backcourt with LaVine, and I think he would fix a lot of what the Bulls really lack just in terms of playmaking on this team. But like you said, I don't really think it's a realistic trade to get him to Chicago. Maybe if they get involved in the three-way.
Yeah, gotta love those three-ways. I think that's basically all for us right now. Do you have any other spare thoughts from the Combine? Any good stories? Anything else like that?
Not too much. I think, you know, my just general draft thoughts right now is that the Lakers hold the keys to the whole draft at number 4, which was a story I wrote on SB Nation. You know, if we're talking about the best case scenario, in my opinion, which is Jared Culver falling to 7. He would give the Bulls just a really smart two-way player who has some ability to create his own shot. I would run him at point guard if they drafted him.
Interesting.
Because that's the role he really played at Texas Tech this year. As a freshman, he was played off the ball exclusively. And this year at Texas Tech, he was the offensive initiator. He isn't like, a natural, he's not a great shooter. That's like right. A big problem of the game, right? So like he lacks the pull-up jump shooting ability. Not even great as a catch and shoot guy, but I do think he can like run a pick and roll and make a good decision in it. He was good in those situations, according to the Synergy stats, during his year at Texas Tech as a sophomore. So I think like you just can't get enough high IQ two-way players, like especially a guy like that who's
and the
strong.
Bulls just haven't had them.
Yeah, good length. Like, even though he doesn't like naturally fit into what a lot of people think the narrative of the rebuild is, which is, oh, we're only missing the point guard, and then we're set.
Yeah.
We have
position. Dude, speaking of that, John, yeah, Paxson literally said that. I think it was in the Rozier piece, or it was just a big piece about Chris Dunn that Darnell wrote that the Rozier stuff was in. He was. Paxson said, like, after the lottery, like, oh, we're pretty set at 2, 3, 4, and 5. Just we need that point guard, and then we'll be great.
Paxson is so full of shit. The biggest problem with the team is that the depth was so terrible because Paxson has been bringing in a clown car of idiots over the last, like, 3 or 4 seasons. Like, he was counting on Jerian Grant, Cameron Payne to be his depth. He signed Felicio to the big contract. He just totally mismanaged the back half of the roster. Which was a big reason why the Bulls have been so garbage the last couple of years. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, to me, you just got it. The Bulls are not in a position to pass on the best player available. Right. I like Culver because he's going to be good defensively. I think he has some value in terms of being able to create his own shot. His jumper is definitely a question mark. But I like putting the ball in his hands, letting him go to work. You know, maybe there's a scenario in which he turns into kind of a new age Andre Iguodala, someone who, can make a play out of a pick and roll, push the ball in transition. Also has value as just like a finisher around the basket and is pretty good defensively. That might be a really high upside comp because Iguodala's peak athleticism is way, way higher.
Yeah, like borderline Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I mean, Iguodala's phenomenal. But I'm just saying like a sort of a similar type of...
A poor man's Iguodala.
Yeah. And someone who, would just have a lot of lineup versatility. And in my opinion, versatility is really the name of the game in today's NBA.
Yeah, I mean, it's something we've talked about a lot. Just like the Bulls have not had two-way players. So they've had decent guys who are good on one end, but not the other. And just when you lack those two-way players, it just creates so many holes in your lineup. And in the playoffs, we've seen just like how important it is to have two-way players. Because if you have a weakness somewhere, teams are going to hammer and hammer away at it. And like if you have those gaps, like, you're just not going to go very deep. Like, and the Warriors obviously just have incredible talent, but like all those, like Draymond, incredible two-way player. You mentioned Iguodala, like Clay is an awesome two-way player now. And like Steph, not a great, he's got his limits on offense, but like he's a pretty good team defender and he's got quick hands and stuff like that when he's not reaching like an idiot. So like just having those two-way players and that versatility is huge. I agree with you. Like I'd be totally, I know the point guard's the big story. I agree with you that I'd be totally happy with Culver after all the stuff I've read. After I've watched him a few times. Said, I know he's got the problem with the jumper, but we have really hammered the point home about just how the Bulls need smart two-way players who are just good at basketball. They need good basketball players who can play on both ends, and that would be pretty good. All right, Ricky is going to get out of here now. We are going to welcome on a guest then, I'll welcome on a guest, Cody Westerlund from 670 The Score. He is the Bulls beat writer for them, does tons of great work. Cody's a really good guy, U of I guy. Shout out to the University of Illinois. So that's gonna be a lot of fun. I will be chatting with him next. Ricky, take it easy. Thank you again, obviously, for the great draft stuff. Before we bring Cody on, though, we will take a word from our sponsor. Harry's Razors is helping Blue Wire listeners with a better shaving experience. Go to harrys.com/bluewire to save $10 on a value trial set, which includes 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade. Rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Enough with the cheap razors. Go try Harry's now. It's just $3 for our loyal listeners. Harry's has fixed shaving by combining a simple, clean design with quality and durable blades at a fair price. Harry's founders were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and overdesigned. Harry's bought a world-class blade factory in Germany that's been making quality blades for over 95 years. So join the 10 million who have tried Harry's. and claim your trial offer by going to harrys.com/bluewire. All of Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee, and if you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. Again, make sure you go to harrys.com/bluewire to redeem your razor for just $3. Welcome back to Cash Considerations. Like I mentioned, Ricky had to leave us. He had some stuff going on. But now we're going to welcome on a very special guest, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. Great Bulls beat writer there. Always going all the games, covering the games. Always puts out great content, gets a lot of good quotes. Plenty of Jim Boylanisms. He was also at the Combine. Ricky was at the Combine. Cody was also at the Combine. So, Cody, welcome. Thank you for coming on. I guess we could just dive right into the Combine stuff. Any major takeaways there overall in terms of the Bulls? Any guys you got to talk to? Just anything interesting from the Combine?
Well, I would say actually the most interesting thing to me was Cam Reddish speaking. Actually, after his, I guess you could call it a much maligned freshman and lone season at Duke, in which he was kind of relegated to the third or fourth wheel on an otherwise terrific basketball team with Zion Williamson and R.J. Barrett. He didn't, like, have any praise whatsoever for R.J. Barrett when he was asked a couple questions, actually, of him. So, like, if you're looking for, like, things I learned at the Combine, obviously the top guys don't have on-court work because they already have their stock plenty high as it is, but a lot of them will talk. And Cam Reddish had a lot of high praise for Zion Williamson, not so much for R.J. Barrett, which I think kind of hints at what we've read or heard on the airwaves through the years as Duke played that season out, that this is a guy that never really felt comfortable there exactly, whether it was on the floor, off the floor, and is really looking forward to get to the NBA and showcasing more of his talent, more of his skills, and maybe having a coach and teammates that better use him. Obviously, when you're 19 or so like he is, and have that rookie season come in, like it's a long learning curve, but I think that guy's eager at the next level to prove what he can do. But I just thought it was odd that, like, they asked him, what was RJ like as a teammate? Oh, he's a good teammate. What was Zion like? And then give like a 45 second answer and then just go on and on. So it really struck me in an interesting way. And I do think that'll be something that NBA teams that are interested in him, and certainly the Bulls are one that will do their due diligence. They're going to have to look into just what kind of teammate he is, how he felt about that season, and whether that was a mirage or whether that's what he is as a basketball player, where he's a little detached. So he has a lot to prove.
Yeah, I feel like I saw this, I think it was yesterday, Mike Schmitz, who does great work, draft work at ESPN, was like tweeting Cam Reddish stuff, like how he, I think he was just basically shooting and doing workouts and how he looked so great, like how he's so talented. And then some other Twitter account tweeted about, like, Cam Reddish is going to be a star, looks awesome. It was the Overtime account. And then I was just like reading through some of the replies, and it was just funny to me because, like, it was all the stuff about how great Cam Reddish was. I'm like, I've been pretty outspoken about against him for a while. Besides Illinois basketball, shout out to awful Illinois basketball. Duke is probably the team I watched most this year, so I got a good chunk of Zion, RJ, and Cam, and just like I kept waiting for Cam to just like show up because he was obviously highly recruited. There was one point where we thought it was going to be like RJ, Zion, Cam, or Zion, RJ, Cam. Just like it never really happened. He had a few good games. Like, do you think just it was just a product of the college and his team? Do you think he really can break out into a star player in the NBA? He seems like such an enigma, maybe a total boomer bust guy. Like, what would you think if the Bulls took him? Like, do you think they actually would take him at number seven if he's there? Obviously, they have more needs at point guard, or depending on what other wings are out there. Like, what do you make of him in general? Just like, do you think he'll be better in the NBA?
Yeah, it's hard for me to project because I watch so much NBA over college. But I mean, The 2-point shooting percentage, right, being 30%, and just his abysmal field goal percentage in general, 35-36%, is really concerning because there were plenty of opportunities to beef that up against poor competition at times as well, or in good situations when his teammates did create for him on a loaded basketball team. And you use the word enigma. I mean, I don't think he's anywhere near the level of like Michael Porter Jr., but when you're looking at guys that are kind of an enigma through the years. Like Porter comes last year with the injury concerns. Like Cam Reddish, in a way, even though he's completely healthy, is that guy this year. And I would actually have no problem with the Bulls taking him. And I say that a couple reasons. One, because last year in a deeper draft, they went the safe route with Wendell Carter Jr. And a lot of people believe after the top three, some believe after the top four, it becomes a real crapshoot this year. So to me, you can view that through two prisms. Like, just try to find a rotation player. You know what I mean? Because you're not finding a star in this draft. There's only three of them. Or you can view it, you know, it's not a good draft. You're not in the top three. You had your bad luck, so take your swing for a home run. Maybe not a home run here, but take a swing for an extra base hit on a prospect instead of going the safe route. And I think at some point in this Bulls rebuild, they do have to swing and take a little bit more risk on their team. I didn't have a problem passing on Michael Porter Jr. last year with those injury problems and adding Wendell Carter. Looks like he's going to be a solid basketball player. But as you move forward, the plan can't just be, you know, add a veteran to do this, because unless that veteran's Kevin Durant, which we know it's not, you got to really ascend to that championship level, and you have to have someone go off and maybe not become Giannis, but someone that you didn't expect to be an all-star caliber player become an all-star. And I think Cam Reddish has those physical tools, and it gets to the point where you have to believe in your player development system and your coaches to get him to that next level. And that says a lot about your organization as a whole. So I would have no problem if they drafted Cam Reddish at all because of those physical tools. And I think they do need to take risk at some point, but it also depends who's there. If you're asking me Jarrett Culver versus Cam Reddish, if they both fall to seven, which probably won't happen, but could, like, I'd still probably go the Jarrett Culver route, but otherwise I really don't have a problem with taking Cam Reddish in a draft this year. That's kind of weak.
I do understand that totally. I just, like, I was just so just watching him. I can't, I would definitely be disappointed, but I do understand the rationale. Like, the Bulls, like, they're not good. They won 22 games this year. Taking a chance, I would get it. Like, I wouldn't feel confident about them developing him in their whatever their system or whatever, but I do get it. You mentioned Jarrett Culver. I know Ricky has talked a lot about Culver. He said that Culver would be like their best case scenario if he fell to them. You said you'd obviously Culver over Reddish. What do you feel about Culver? Do you share Ricky's thoughts about him being like the best case scenario, him falling to seven? What do you make of Jarrett Culver?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be about as close to a best case scenario as they could get. I like him, and I like him because he's a two-way player. And you come back to the point, like, is he all-star caliber? I don't know. Ricky has stronger beliefs on him than that. But, like, I'm completely in the camp of the Bulls just need a lot more two-way players or better basketball players. And say what you want, but, like, Zach LaVine's not that yet. Obviously, Chris Dunn hasn't been that for the past couple of years. Otto Porter Jr., that's why they added him, because he can bring stuff to both ends of the floor. But Bobby Portis, that's part of the reason he's in Washington. The Jabari Parker experiment didn't work out. We know Denzel Valentine, which is not a difference maker whatsoever defensively. So they've got to get guys who can do more. I mean, we're sitting here watching Raptors, Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals. We're not even talking Warriors of the West here yet. Just to compete at the highest level in the Eastern Conference, you got to have two-way players. I mean, the Bucks are stacked with these guys. So he'd be the 3-and-D mold, the Jarrett Culver, and I feel like he could fit in right away. He'd probably be more helpful sooner than some of these other guys they could take who would be a little bit more projects and such. So I do think that's probably best-case scenario. I also think he'll probably go in the top six and the Bulls won't have that option. But I like him because he can kind of create for himself, get in the lane, finish a little bit, and then knock down some three-point shots. I mean, not off the dribble in a way that we see kind of the high-level teams play, but, you know, a guy that can stretch the floor a little bit more while bringing it defensively as well.
Yeah, you talk about some of the other guys available. Like, big thing about the Bulls, they need that point guard. That's not the only thing that they have issues with. But I know Paxson had that quote that Darnell Mayberry got that was like, it's like, we're pretty good at the 2, 3, 4, and 5, whatever. They need a lot more than that. But the point guard spot, do you like Darius Garland, Kobe White? Obviously, they're not going to get Ja Morant. I mean, it looks like right now Garland and White possibly also could go higher. But if one of those two were to fall, do you have a preference there? I don't know enough about Garland, and I honestly didn't watch enough Kobe White either, to be honest. Like, I don't have that strong of an opinion on either guy. I know Ricky did have Kobe White going to the Bulls at number 7 right after the lottery happened. So what do you make of any of those guys? Do you get to talk to any of them at the combine? I feel like they both left early. Do you have a preference there?
Yeah, we did talk to Coby White, and I mean, he said all the right things and everything. That he'd like to play in Chicago. He'd like to play pretty much anywhere that drafts him. Of course, and he made the point, though. For example, North Carolina played basketball at such a pace and a style, getting up and down the floor, that they didn't do a lot of the things that NBA teams do in a half court set. Notably, run a lot of pick and roll. So, Coby White there. I just think out of everyone the Bulls could draft, including Cam Reddish, I think Coby White would have the biggest learning curve. You have to have the most patience with him, because not only does he not have, or not only is he coming off that freshman season and not have all the experience in the style of the NBA at the collegiate level, but he's playing the hardest position to learn, basically, as an NBA rookie. Like, it's almost equivalent to throwing a rookie quarterback out there in the NFL. Like, you got to direct everything. The pace of the game is different. All your new teammates and understanding, getting on the same page with them, it's really difficult. Whereas in a way you can just kind of throw, I mean, if they got Jarrett Culver out, trot him out, have him play defense, knock down some three pointers, play within the system. Like, when you're asking your point guard to initiate this, like, they are the start of the year entire system at that point in the half court. So it would take a lot of time with him. And that's, if he's the guy available, like if it goes Zion and then Ja Morant, RJ Barrett, and then Darius Garland and Culver and Reddish, and those guys are gone and such, like, then you're at a spot where I'm looking like DeAndre Hunter's projected to go in the top 10 or top 8 by most people. And then you're getting to the spot where, like, do you believe in this long-term vision if you're the Bulls and draft Coby White and give it a run, which I think they, everything they do, and we can get to this in a second with trade possibilities, still needs to have the long-term focus. But if it's like Coby White versus DeAndre Hunter, like, if they draft DeAndre Hunter, to me, it's like, hey, you know, we want to win more quick. We want to win quickly so he can contribute next year. And then that, too, to me, would tilt toward we got to compete next year for the 7 or 8 seeds, stuff like that, where Coby White would take more time. And I'm all about the Bulls still having patience with this rebuild, because I don't think any of this is a quick fix. None of these guys, as much as Lauri Markkanen is impressed, aren't coming along at an outrageous pace or anything. I mean, you look at Utah, Donovan Mitchell's already kind of like a bona fide star out there, you know, someone coming along really quickly. But Lowry's coming on at a more deliberate pace, obviously had injuries last year. But this is just, the entire thing is a reminder of how much patience is going to be needed. And I have no problem with drafting a guy here that needs more patience. And you brought up, I guess, Coby White versus Darius Garland. Haven't seen a lot of either, obviously, Garland because of the meniscus tear and missed most of his freshman season at Vanderbilt. What I like about him, if that does get to that point for the Bulls, is that everyone praises Garland's off the dribble shooting ability, which is something Coby White doesn't have. And I like that because, I mean, we see, obviously, it's Steph Curry's the one of the three greatest point guards, maybe second greatest point guard already in NBA history here, his ability to shoot off the dribble. But we see that to a lesser extent with other teams, like Jamal Murray can shoot off the dribble for the Nuggets. And that just changes the calculus of your offense, having a lead ball handler who can do that at an efficient rate and such. So that's why I'd be intrigued by Darius Garland, is what the scouts praise him about, just his off-the-bounce ability to create for himself. So that's appealing as well. I mean, I don't think they'll have a choice between both. Right. The choice might be made for I'm the number 7.
Yeah, I would assume one of those guys is at least gone. I mean, the Suns need a point guard. I mean, the Grizzlies will take Morant. And then I guess, who knows what the Lakers are going to do? God knows what. Do you think there's any chance, before we get, you mentioned trade stuff and we talk about winning quickly, do you think there's any chance they trade up or down? What do you, well, and then we'll talk about other trades besides that, but up or down, do you think there's any chance they would try to go that route?
I think they could try to trade down. I don't think they'd trade up because that just costs way too much draft capital. And they don't have a lot of spare parts, by the way, of younger guys to just add. So it'd probably be a future first-round pick. I mean, just to move up a couple spots last year, remember the Mavs had to, two spots to get Doncic, had to give up a first-round draft pick this year. That's just a bad idea for the Bulls. It's not something they really like to do a lot. I know they did it with Doug McDermott.
It's a disaster.
It was a real, real disaster. I think they're probably a little hesitant about that. Moving back, John Paxson already talked about the tier system, and if they have guys that are rated similarly, they wouldn't be afraid to go for position over maybe the best pure talent in the same tier of players, which to me hints at, you know, if we can move back 3 or 4 spots or something, wouldn't have a problem doing it, is kind of the frame of mind I see them looking at that situation. But it's just, it's like, I don't think, in this draft, when it's weak like that, I don't think there's a strong desire by other teams to move up. Maybe that changes as we get closer to the draft, but it doesn't seem like there'll be quite as much action around that part when the draft isn't as deep. So I could see them moving that pick for a player or trying to move back. In some fashion, but I don't expect it. I wouldn't bet on it.
So you talk about moving the pick for a player, like a veteran. I know you tweeted about that right after the lottery happened, since they fall back to 7 and that Paxton was kind of hinting maybe this is something we'll do. Are there any trades out there where you would be down to trade number 7 or something? I know one of the big things, I wrote about this at Forbes. I know other people have written about it. The Mike Conley thing, the Grizzlies are going to draft John Morant. Conley's going to get traded. Is there any trade that you would be willing to make? Even not even 7, I guess. Like 7, I'm assuming the Grizzlies would ask for. But is there any trade at all you would make for Mike Conley?
There's no trade that I would make for Mike Conley for the Bulls whatsoever at all. I don't think he fits the timeline.
You mentioned that. So I figured you were going to say that, since you talk about patience and all that stuff. So I figured that answer was coming, but go ahead.
Yeah. The money doesn't bother me. Like, whatever. The Bulls are in a rebuild. Who cares what happens with the money the next 2 years? That's why I'm not concerned about, like, Chris Felicio's $8 million or whatever he's making a year. It's terrible money, but you're not winning in the next 2 years anyway. And you cannot possibly start a rebuild from the ground up and say that you're prioritizing chasing championships and then a couple of years into it, give up a number 7 pick, which, again, it's a weak draft, I understand. But move that pick for the short-term goal of what's the ceiling with Mike Conley for this team. If everything went right, I guess maybe they're a 5 seed still or something. Like, there's no way that team's getting past the second round of the playoffs still next year. So that would make no sense. Like, take the home run swing and hope that your player development system can help Cam Reddish become a quality NBA starter with the long-term vision and ceiling that you don't have right now on this team. The Mike Conley stuff makes no sense to me. I don't know how deeply they're seriously considering it, but like, for John Paxson to come out on lottery night and say, like, he basically unprompted said when he was just talking about the events of the night, like, oh yeah, we can do a lot with the number 7 pick. You know, we can trade it. Don't forget, we can trade this pick. Well, hey, that's cool. If you want to trade for Lonzo Ball and you're the Bulls, I think that fits. Cause look, he's got 2 years left on his rookie deal. Yep. You can lock him up in restricted free agency for like another 4 years. That's a guy that fits your plan for 6 years. Mike Conley is not that. You cannot sell or mortgage your long-term for short term here just to chase a couple of playoff games at home next year. It would really hurt the rebuild, and it would say everything you need to know about how committed the Reinsdorfs are to the rebuild if they add Mike Conley, because it wouldn't be very committed at all.
I feel like it is a move. It would not surprise me, I feel like, if they did it. I guess same note. I don't think Jrue Holiday is going to be on the market. I think they're going to keep him. Would that be the same boat for you? I know he's a few years younger. Same boat on that. Don't give up that 7 pick for a veteran point guard. Is that what you're saying? Lonzo makes sense because he's young, rookie deal. But basically, Holiday, Conley, nothing like that. Any other veteran point guard like that? It's a no.
I like Jrue Holiday more than Mike Conley just because I think he's a better basketball player. And I'd have to look. I don't know how many years does Holiday have left on his contract.
I think he's got next year, and then I think it's the same as Conley. I think like next year and then like another like option the year, I think, on the end of it.
Yeah, I like him more, again, because he's younger, and I just think he's a better two-way player, can do more for your team. That one I'd have to think about more. I haven't thought deeply. I would still hedge toward no, though. I would understand it more. Even though,
actually, hold on, let me stop it there. He actually has next year, 2020-21, and then another, and then an option 2020-21-22. So that'd be like, I assume he's keeping that $27 million for 2021. So I don't know if that would change your opinion on that, where it's basically going to be 3 more years after this. I mean, he is only, I think he's 27-28. So it's like through his prime, he's been mostly healthy lately. I know his season ended early this year, but like the last couple of years, he hasn't had as many of the leg problems that he had. So, yeah, I don't know.
I do like that a lot. I do like that a lot more because I do think that third year to me would matter too, because I don't think the Bulls are going to accomplish much in the next 2 years that would, like, Mike Conley's on the downside of his career, right? Basically. Holiday with that third year, like, I could see the Bulls doing something 3 seasons from now that's a little bit bigger. And when you do that, and then people like the system, like the culture, and maybe you fell just short of making the Eastern Conference Finals or just short in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, everyone's got that feeling, hey, let's run this back. We can do this. We're almost there. Lauri Markkanen's really blossoming into his prime, and we understand each other now. So Holiday makes a lot more sense. It doesn't make sense to me with the – you got $21, maybe $24 million in cap space. Like, if you're the Bulls, just go get a veteran point guard in free agency that's like 80-85% as productive as Mike Conley, and you're going to still end up in the same spot, maybe a couple games out of a playoff berth instead of chasing that 8 seed and getting it. But to me, that takes care of a lot of the problem. Like, I look at the point guard thing as like, have a capable, competent point guard, foster the development of Wendell Carter, Lauri Markkanen, and these guys. And you can do that for less than the cost of Mike Conley and money and draft.
Right. So I think that's a perfect segue to, I was going to actually ask just about the free agent market for point guards. Is there anybody that you would prefer? We're watching the Bucks right now. Like, would you want them to maybe make a run at Malcolm Brogdon? We saw Darnell reported possible interest in Terry Rozier, which I do not really, not a big, huge fan of that. There's Darren Collison, Ricky Rubio, Patrick Beverley, D Rose is out there. So which of these guys would do you think the Bulls should target?
I love the idea of chasing Malcolm Brogdon. I mean, we know how efficient he is when you throw up the 50-40-90 line. Has had some injury concerns, obviously, these past couple of years, so I get that. I was actually going to ask you about him. How much do you think it would take for the Bulls to get him in restricted free agency? Like, what would they have to offer out of their $21, $22, $3 million that they would have open or so? Because I think it'd be a high cost. You'd, like, have to pay the tax on it to get him away from the Bucks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because
that is the
market value, they're just going to
match. That is my concern about it. I think the target makes sense. I know there's some concern about his creation skills and all that. Like, he's not, I don't know, maybe he's not quite the pure point guard you're looking for, but the efficiency in playing like off LaVine, I think, would make so much sense. Solid two-way player. But yeah, I mean, because the Bucks are going to have, I know, some of their own tax issues. They got to pay Middleton. They already gave Bledsoe this big extension, which is looking disastrous right now. Nico is a free agent. I would assume that they're not going to bring him back. I know Brooke Lopez is a free agent. Like, they have a ton of free agents to bring back. I saw a rumor today about Tony Snell. They need to get they're paying him like $20 million over the next 2 years, I think, because they gave him like a 4-year, $40 million extension. I totally forgot about that. He has been totally out of the rotation. So, like, they got a lot of guys making a decent amount of money. They got to pay guys. So I guess it depends on how willing they are to go into the tax. I feel like,
yeah, I mean, I don't think they're not going to blink at $15 million a year.
That's the thing. So, like, is it going to take the full, your full cap space, $20 million? And at that point, like, is he worth that? Like, I think he's really good, but are you doing 4 years, $80 million for Brogdon? And basically, like, I mean, if it's your whole cap space, it's basically what, 4 years, $80 million, 4 years, 85. I don't know about that. That might be what it takes to get the Bucks to say no. And that's where it's kind of tough in this situation.
I think he'd fit. I think I would do that just because I know that's big, but like, we know the salary cap's going up. The longer these go, the better the deals look. And the other reason, I think Brogdon would fit really well next to Zach LaVine, because we saw it last year. Like, Zach LaVine and the Bulls don't want him to be the full-time point guard, but he likes the ball in his hands a lot. And Mike Conley, again, back to him, he needs that ball in his hands a lot too. Like, he wouldn't be the best fit next to LaVine in my mind. Whereas Brogdon, I mean, when you can hit over 40% from three-point land and be a two-way player like he is, and your question mark is your creation ability from play to play all the time, like, that fits well next to Zach LaVine to me. And Zach's got 3 more years left on his contract. The Bulls have gone a long way to embolden and empower him at times, and at other times rein him in. He's put a lot of resources into him, it feels like, not just from a financial standpoint, but just from a personal standpoint, and trying to get on the same page with him and everything. So I think Brogdon is an example of helping that. You mentioned Terry Rozier. Want nothing of him. Like, I can't shoot. He's Chris Dunn to me, basically, maybe better at defense and a bit better at offense, but same questions. I like all the other guys. Most of the other guys you mentioned, like Darren Collison, I think is a fit. I think Patrick Beverley is a good fit. I don't like D Rose coming back. The Bulls wanted to get away from that circus, for lack of a better word, a few years ago when they traded him to the Knicks, just the daily grind that it had been with the storylines and narrative following him around everywhere, and his off the floor troubles as well in these ensuing years. So I don't see him coming back either. Ricky Rubio, I don't know. Like, he needs the ball in his hands too, I feel like. But you
can't
need a
really
professional.
Shoot. I'm not a big fan of Rubio either.
You strike out on everyone else, maybe. Yeah. But, like, I prioritize Brogdon. I'd prioritize, obviously, we just mentioned Collison and Beverly is who I prioritize the Bulls.
I'm kind of right there with you. I'm with you on the D-Rose thing. I got to stay away. Speaking of moving on, obviously, this is just kind of a joke. There was the whole – I'm assuming you saw the Jimmy Butler, Jim Boylan photo.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, great photo. I love those. Those are my
favorite. And everyone's like, oh, would you want Jimmy Butler back in the Bulls? And just like, come on, people. Like, Jimmy Butler's not coming back. The Bulls don't want him back. He doesn't want to come back. Jimmy Butler's not going to go from whatever, a good Sixers team and all the rumors about the Lakers or whatever and all that stuff to coming back to the Bulls. We're like, you probably know more than this, but there's all this stuff out there. But his agent or his workout guy trashing Gar Forman? I think Cowley put out reports about how, like, Gar Forman lied to Jimmy Butler. It's like, come on, guys. Like, Jimmy Butler's not coming back to the Bulls.
No, I think Jimmy should go around anyone that is associated with the Bulls organization and just take selfies with them the whole summer, though.
Just troll.
Like, rile up the internet. I love how it went from – it wasn't like 0 to 60. It was like 0 to 100 immediately. Jimmy Butler coming back to the Bulls based on this photo. So it was good stuff. But no, same thing with him. I mean, he was high maintenance at times. Some of that's because his relationship with Fred Hoiberg wasn't good from a basketball standpoint all the time. But he's not coming back. They don't want him back, not because they don't respect him, but just because they obviously moved on at that point. But, you know, I mean, they need to start getting guys like Jimmy Butler's talent level to consider. Like, if you're going to strike out on – it's one thing to strike out on Kevin Durant and the A-list targets, but – that next tier, the Bulls should be an organization in the mix, in the picture, selling these guys, getting meetings with that type of player, that Jimmy Butler, guys at his level.
On that point then, like, obviously this is coming out of nowhere. We talk about point guards. So, like, if the Bulls were able to dump salary, would you try to make a run at Kemba? Or do you think he would give the Bulls the time of day?
I think Kemba would give them the time of day. I do. I think New York would be the priority for him. The Knicks are... obviously,
I mean, if Kyrie goes there, I mean, he's not going there if Kyrie goes there. I would think not.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, places like Dallas needs a point guard, wants another backcourt mate, I'd be the best way to put it for Luka Doncic. He plays a lot of point guard for them. So I do think Kemba would give him the time of day, though. Like, I think Kemba believes he's good enough to play alongside – if he looks at a team that has Otto Porter – Zach LaVine and some of the young talent the Bulls have in Markkanen and Carter, like, he looks at that and goes, yeah, I can lead this team to the playoffs. We can be good. I don't think he thinks he's going to get a championship, but he's not looking for a championship on his next contract. Probably he's looking to get paid. Everyone's looking for a championship, but I have a feeling with him, like, he wants to make the playoffs. Right, he wants to be important. Yeah. And I think he would give the Bulls the time of day. I think it'd still be tough for them because, again, he doesn't fit the timeline perfectly either. Like, right when he really gets on his downside and his contract in the later years becomes bad is when you'd want to fit guys around Markkanen and Carter's contracts on quality deals and whoever they draft in the first round this year. So I think the timeline's a bit off for him.
Yeah, makes sense. A little more here. I guess Jim Boylan extension. I know you've tweeted about how, like – about Jim Boylan and how he's super entertaining for you guys, all the quotes, Jim Boylanisms. I guess, what do you make of the Boylan extension, and what is your favorite Jim Boylanism?
My favorite Jim Boylanism. I did like how that when you introduced me on the podcast, you have terrific quotes. Like, I feel like we each on the beat kind of have a lane that we fill, you know? And sometimes my lane, I'm called upon to get the Jim Boylanisms out quickly as possible to the people.
People.
So I take great pride in that people appreciate it like you. What was it? My job is to prepare the child for the road for the child. I really liked that one. Not because it was unheard of, like, in history, like, he didn't actually make it up or whatever, but, like, no one ever uses it, you know? Like, Jim Boylan bringing things back into style, I really like. Everyone loves the spirit stuff, but that's just kind of played out by now. But as it pertains to his contract extension, it didn't make sense to me. I think he needs to prove more as a tactician before you commit to him long term. And we don't know how long term the Bulls committed to him because they weren't proud enough to say how many years.
I think Cowley reported that maybe 3 years, basically starting next year. They basically ripped up this deal and he'll start a 3-year deal next year. That's like all I saw on it.
That's the feeling I have on it from reading Cowley as well, who has done the best reporting on all of this with Jim Boylan. But it just didn't make sense. I need to give him praise. He did come in and establish a better culture of accountability, and I believe that matters, especially matters with the young team. I do think he's been very good at communicating with his players, and they've had some good stretches. I just don't see the vision from him playing out on the floor consistently enough for the Bulls to commit long-term like that. So I would have just had him run it back on a prove-it deal one more year. Like, do the Bulls actually implement and execute the vision for shooting more three-pointers, for defending the three-point line better, for getting better shots in different areas on the floor? Like, you can't throw it to Robin Lopez every other possession for the first half of a game and then act like you're with it in the modern NBA. Like, I understand the team was terrible, but I would have rather seen like Walt Lemon Jr. shooting three-pointers that were terrible in the flow of the offense rather than throwing it to Robin Lopez or something, you know? Yeah. So I thought he left so much to be desired from a basketball standpoint that the extension was short-sighted and just wrong to do at this point. I would have made him prove more before I would have moved forward with that. And I just think in general, like, no matter what industry you're in, like, taking the guy that's already in your organization and not opening up an open position to the best and the brightest just to see, to get their ideas, to see if there's someone better out there, it doesn't make any sense to me, whatever, from a logical
perspective. Yeah, I mean, they haven't done a real coaching search since basically Thibs, like, which is crazy. Like,
it went really well too. Like, the last time the Bulls did a real coaching search, they hit it out of the park. I mean, perfect for Thibs at that time was perfect for the Bulls.
I agree. It does not make sense. I guess I do kind of like the hire of Chris Fleming, Nets assistant coach, who's also with the Nuggets at one point. Like, the Nets, we know they built a culture. They made the playoffs here. They play fast. They shoot a bunch of threes. So I guess hoping that Fleming's presence there will maybe rub off on Boylan and help the offense become a more modern and more three-pointers. Do you think that's anything? Like, do you like that hired? Do you think he'll help the offense become more modern?
I like it. I do. I like everything the Nets have done the last few years from a player development standpoint. So I think that will maybe be his biggest responsibility. I know everyone's going to the offensive strategy and defensive strategy, stuff like that. But I actually think just him being in that sort of culture they made their own all-star really in D'Angelo Russell, guys that were kind of bargain bin or scrap heap guys step up and be real big contributors. So I think that's great for the Bulls to hire him. And I think he had experience with the Nuggets before that when they weren't taking off yet, but when they were laying the foundation for being the 2 seed in the West this year and such. So like his background, everything I've heard about him has been good. So far, it sounded like everyone in Brooklyn was sad to lose him as an assistant, which, like, that's as good of a praise as you can get if you're the Bulls, you know, taking guys that other teams want to keep. So he should help. I hope he helps these young guys because their growth was stunted a lot last year, it just felt like. And that's what happens with the coaching change and so much turnover. And really, I mean, the Bulls, once they fired Hoiberg, their assistant staff was like, I mean, it was a mess, you know, like Randy Brown resigned shortly thereafter, too. And people are getting moved up from the G League, new responsibility mid-season. It was out of whack. So they really need stability there, and he should help provide that.
Looks like a bit of news today. The coaching staff lost Pete Myers. He's been around forever, right? I don't know exactly off the top of my head, but so they'll have another person to add. I know they went after the Texas Tech dude, and he's unfortunately he said no. I can't remember what his name was. Do you remember his name?
Mark Adams,
I believe. I feel like that would have been a really nice hire as well. Texas Tech had the best defense in the country this past year, so that was kind of unfortunate. So he's still got some staff to build out here, and I guess but at least Fleming is a good start, at least, so we'll see. To wrap up here, I guess just looking at ahead to next season. We obviously still need to have the draft and free agency and all that. Just based on, I guess, just like a normal offseason, they take somebody at seven, they don't make any like big crazy trades, and then whatever, they add a few, they add a point guard, they add some other veterans. I guess, what do you think will happen to, will be the Bulls record next season? Like, do you think they can make the playoffs? Do you think they're still just super far away? Like, I'm more in like, I think they'll take a jump, but like, I feel like they're so far away where they're still not going to be that good. So where do you think they end up, assuming that it's just like a normal offseason?
Well, yeah, for the purpose of this exercise, let's say they get Patrick Beverley.
Yeah, sure.
Someone I think fits next to Zach LaVine, a better point guard. That's to say I think he's most likely to end up in Chicago to address the point guard position, but I think that would be a normal offseason. Add another veteran on the bench. Like, the bench was so thin last year for injuries and stuff. Like, add another veteran on the bench just to play this number 7-8 man minutes on the team or whatnot. I don't think it's a playoff team yet. And I think that because Jim Boylan's system, like, I can see them jumping up by way of better health should definitely be for like sure. 5-7 more wins from 22. Patrick Beverley and just having consistent point guard play. I mean, you easily add 5 wins on that. Like, you're looking like, this is, again, best case scenario. You're at like 34, 35 now, with good health and a good point guard, better bench and everything. But to elevate from like that 9-10 seed range in the East to being a playoff team, their style would have to become much more efficient in the way they play on the floor offensively and defensively. And we overlooked this at times. Bulls were a mess defensively for long stretches. Oh, yeah.
Basically
too.
All season. They had that like one decent stretch when Boylan was first hired. And besides that, it was awful. I know Wendell was hurt for a while, but I mean, they were good with Robin Lopez was a better, I know Carter looked really good. He looked promising, but I mean, Lopez, I think his like defensive numbers were better overall, and he's a solid veteran, knows what he's doing, but just overall the defense was mostly a mess. And like that, they still have a long way to go to make that better.
Yeah. So I'm thinking like good health, everything goes right, but they still do the things. They're still Jim Boyling. I don't think that's a word, but you get the idea, like 36, 38 wins at best. And we know their health probably isn't going to be good all season. And we don't know if they'll sign the right point guard. We don't know if there will be another near mutiny or sort of regression by way of people upset in the Advocate Center. So I don't see them being a playoff team next year. I think they should be in the playoff hunt the whole season. I don't think they should be shutting people down in March. Like, they should at least see the 8 seed and be like 3 or 4 back and playing hard and playing for something every night. If they're not, it's another setback and another stall in the rebuild for them. But I still don't think they're quite a playoff team next year. And even if everything goes right.
Totally fair. I thought they were going to be, I feel like next year is probably what I think they're going to be what I was hoping they were going to be this year, which was basically like, I did like an over under bet thing with my friend and I had like 34.5 and I took the over because I thought maybe they could get to like 35 wins. So I feel like that's probably where I think they'll end up next season, which I think obviously still short, like that'd be probably right around the playoffs that end up like 4, 5, 6 games out, which I mean, if you jump up by 13 wins like that, like I think that's progress. Like I think that'd be fine. I know some optimistic fans think they can be a playoff team and win 40 to 45 games. Like, I think that's crazy. That's 20, 25 win jumps just don't happen very often unless you like adding Kevin Durant. So like if they added 10 to 15 wins and they're like in the mix, like you said, like, I think that'd be a good season. So
I was off in my predictions thinking they would be better than they were, obviously, because like the year before I was like, oh, 27 wins and they were literally trying to lose in this region. Like, if they try to win, that's worth a few more wins. And then it just went.
Shit.
But hey, before we end it, you said what's my favorite Jim Boylanism. Yes. What's your?
Oh, God. I really do love Jacked and Juiced. I don't know. There's so many. Like, I know Stefan noted that awesome thing at the Athletic, just compiling all this stuff. And obviously, you've been compiling it as well on Twitter all these times. Like, there's just so many good ones. Jacked and Juiced, I don't know why. It's just really funny to me. It just sounds so meatball-y and so goofy.
You say that, and I feel like now I need to create one Twitter thread string of spirit references for a whole year.
Do it.
Every time, just go back to the same one and add. Like, it'd be like 450 tweets by the end of the year.
Please do it. That'd be a great project.
Ah, I love it. This is why we do podcasts, to come up with great ideas like that.
Absolutely. So I think we're good here. Cody, thank you so much for coming on. Let the people know where they could find your work, your Twitter, all that good stuff.
Yeah, 670thescore.com/Bulls is our Bulls website. We're the home of the Chicago Bulls. You can hear all the Bulls games on 670 The Score, as long as the Cubs, I guess, aren't in the playoffs. I think they might take precedence sometimes with on-air play-by-play rights. But yeah, and then check me out on Twitter at Cody Westerland, and that's Westerland with a U at the end. But yeah, appreciate you having me on, Jason. It was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on, and we will be sure to do this again. And that'll be for all for Cash Considerations, Chicago Bulls podcast. As always, shout out to Blue Wire Network, podcast network. You can follow them, follow us on Twitter at Blue Wire Pods. Tons of good basketball podcasts are on the network. We got our Blue Wire Buckets playoff pod. I was just on it earlier this week. A lot of fun to talk with some of the guys on there. And then, of course, we got a bunch of teams. We got Warriors. We got Bucks. Bunch of other teams out there. So please be sure to check out Blue Wire. And in terms of Cash Considerations, please go rate and review us. iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, all that good stuff. We also post these on bloggable.com. So tons of places you could find Cash Considerations. So this was Jason. Ricky was on earlier. And Cody, thank you so much again. Have a good night.